Welcome to Latte with a Lawyer, a podcast dedicated to bringing you the stories of some of America's most successful lawyers, figuring out what makes them tick, how they creatively solve problems, and how others aspiring to be them can follow in their footsteps.
Okay, good morning. Welcome to another episode of Latte with a Lawyer. I'm your host, Jonathan Brickman. And still this morning, we have with us Peter Naber from the law firm McManus, Ateshoglu, Aiello, and Apostolakos in New York.
Great. You got it.
Excellent.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to the show. So, Latte with a Lawyer, what's your morning beverage of choice?
So, I start every morning with a triple shot of espresso over ice.
Nice. Wait, yeah. Over ice?
Over ice, yeah.
Wow, I haven't heard of that one before.
Yeah, in the winter, I'll change it up a bit and just go hot, but... Yeah, generally triple shot of espresso to start the morning.
No milk, just the espresso.
Yes.
Wow. So when you go out drinking with your buddies, you must like to have shots then.
I don't mind them. I like an espresso martini from time to time as well.
Yeah, no, I like a little more volume there. So that gets right into the bloodstream quickly.
Yeah. Right, nice good. Way to start the morning off.
All right, good stuff. And are you guys back in the office working or working at home?
Yeah, so we're a little bit of mixed. I've been in the office about 5 days a week though for a few months now, probably over a year at this point. But yeah, we do offer some hybrids. So we have a few people that come in 3 days a week or so, yeah. And we have all the remote capabilities. So some attorneys work remotely as well.
Got it. Why in the office for you?
I live in Brooklyn. I live in an apartment. After a while in the pandemic, I started to go a little bit crazy just being in home all the time. And I like being in the office. I like interacting with people. I like interacting with my colleagues. And I think it's always better to, when you're in person, it's a lot easier to bounce ideas off of each other, talk about your cases. And
yeah. Absolutely. And where's your office? You said you got an office in Manhattan. Where is it in Manhattan?
Yeah, it's in Lower Manhattan on Wall Street.
Okay.
And we have another. Yeah. So, and we have another office out in Garden City in Long Island.
Okay. Yeah. No, I figured Brooklyn, it must be Lower Manhattan. So that's an easy commute.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm about 15 minutes in the morning, which is nice.
Oh, nice. So is it in like the Wall Street? Where exactly is it in Lower Manhattan? What street?
Yeah. It's on Wall Street.
Oh, it's on Wall Street. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very good. I used to be in a business that sold into Wall Street, investment banks, broker deals. I spent a lot of time in New York walking around those streets. So
they're starting to get filled up again. It was for a while it was pretty dead. Now you see the tourists coming back and stuff now in the area. So it's definitely getting busy again down here, which is nice.
Oh, excellent. That's fantastic. That's good. So tell us about the kind of law that you practice there.
Yeah, so at our firm, we're primarily a defense-based personal injury firm, construction, labor law, accident defense. But we do a wide array of things as well. We also handle some personal injury cases on the plaintiff side.
Oh, you do?
We okay. do, yeah. So we also do some commercial litigation as well. We defend municipalities. We do some wage and hour claims as well. So we're a very well-rounded firm. Primarily though, the area that I work in is generally personal injury defense cases, labor law defense cases.
Personal injury defense. And you say construction. So is it related to construction?
Yeah. So like the construction labor law cases. So if someone's injured on a job site, we are generally retained by their insurance carriers to represent the general contractors, subcontractors on the site, even the owners on the site.
Okay.
In those lawsuits. Yeah.
Is there still a lot of construction happening in Lower Manhattan?
It seems like it's picking up again, because there's certainly been a lot of cases have been going into suit recently. I think part of that was, there was a delay on filing suit for a while during COVID. And then just because there was a delay in the court, I think some people may be put off commencing suits until things started opening up a bit. And you can definitely tell the construction's starting to, the construction's coming back. There's cases coming in with construction site accidents.
Oh, good.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. I heard Century City opened up again. The retailer, right? What is it? Century?
Oh,
Century City. The discount retailer down there opened again.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of it. I don't know off the top
you know
of
the
my
story?
Head.
You ever been in there? Oh my God.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those like, you know, a discounter, but it's in Manhattan. It's kind of like an institution there. Mm. Century, what is it? Century something. Anyway, I just saw that recently. But all right, good stuff. And are you from New York? Where'd you grow up?
Yeah, so I grew up in Yonkers, just outside the city, just outside okay. the Bronx, more specifically. So you know, I was there for most of my childhood. And then I went to college for a year at Fairleigh Dickinson in New Jersey. And then I ended up transferring to James Madison in Virginia. So I was down there for 3 years and then back up to New York after that for yeah. law school at Pace. And
how'd you pick James Madison?
Yeah, so it's funny. My grandmother had went there when it was an all-female school, and it was yeah. primarily a teaching school many years ago. And she had always talked about it. She loved it. So at one point when I was considering transferring out of Fairleigh Dickinson, I went down to visit. I loved the campus. I loved the school. I was like, this is the place to go. Yeah, it's funny. It's one of those places where, you know, not many people have heard about it. I feel like it's starting to get a little bit bigger now. But it was kind of one of those hidden gems, because a few other people from Westchester that I know ended up going there as well. And it was just a great place to go to school.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know a lot of people that have gone there. I lived yeah. in the DC area for a while.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I know James Madison. But it's yeah,
I was just last weekend.
Oh, were you? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I had a wedding.
Nice. But yeah, people from Westchester, I would think, stay in the SUNY system or probably don't travel to places.
Yeah, I think that's true. I know a lot of my group of friends, you know, a few people went to the city schools, but a lot of us ended up going out of state because okay. I think it was kind of those things, especially with my group of friends, a lot of us wanted to stay in the New York area, right. you know, for good after we graduated. Sure. So having the opportunity to kind of leave for a little bit and then come back, I think a lot of, you know, at least my group of friends, it's a lot of what we did.
You've seen the map in New York, right? Like it ends in New York and then there's nothing else. So that's, you got a little perspective. You left, you came back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. My, actually my daughter goes to Skidmore in Saratoga Springs.
I love Saratoga. Go up there every summer.
Oh, you go up there?
Yeah, we go there every summer. We go, you know, we go to the track for some horse races and we go up there at least once every summer with my group of friends.
Oh, good. Yeah, it's a very cool place.
Yeah, it is.
So talk more about the kind of work that you do there. Construction. I mean, give me some examples of cases that you work on.
Yeah, so for example, it could be somebody working on a scaffold. They fall off of the job site. They fall off of the scaffold and sustain injuries. There's also been other kind of construction cases where people are working and maybe something from an elevated height fell on them, working on a beam that kind of collapsed and landed and caused injuries. Just the various different hazards that can occur on the job site that could result in injuries. In New York, there's the Labor Law 240, which is strict liability upon owners and general contractors on a job site. Yep. So there's a lot of litigation that kind of stems from that. So that's a you know, a good portion of the work we do is those construction sites. But then we also do just your standard general liability type cases. So you're tripping and falls on a sidewalk, you're slipping falls. We do some motor vehicle defense as well on the personal injury defense side.
Okay. So, and do you find yourself going into jury trials or you settling before you get there?
A little bit of both. I think it kind of depends on what the best thing to do is for our client, kind of considering everything. If it's a case where, you know, it's going to be difficult to defend liability, we try to, you know, work out a reasonable settlement. If it's a case where, you know, it needs to go to trial for a jury to, you know, to decide, then, you know, we're always willing to do that. We do go to trials. I began a trial on Tuesday for a motor vehicle case. We started jury selection, but then that ultimately settled. So there's definitely, you know, a lot of these cases do end up ultimately settling, but our firm always has an eye towards going to trial. We have a lot of litigators at our firm.
Yep.
Sia Apostolakis, one of the partners here, you know, she was homicide at the Bronx DA's office, you know, before she got into this area. And yeah, she's done a bunch of civil trials as well, okay, as the other partners at our firm, Nick Neonakis, Steve Ateshoglu, Phil Ayalo, and then, you know, myself as well. So we're always looking at a case, assuming it's going to go to trial, and preparing it that way.
How do you make that decision? I mean, it costs money, right? I mean, you're billable hours, right? You're not doing it on contingency. So how do you make that case that it makes sense to go to trial when it's going to cost money to do that?
Yeah, so I think it's a number of kind of factors that play into that. It's a bad liability case, then we're going to have to settle. But if it's one of those cases where, you know, maybe the settlement demand is unreasonable, or it's a case where liability is, you know, questionable as to our client, and it does make sense to go to trial, then again, we are also dealing with insurance companies. So sometimes there's a business decision in terms of settling a case, whether it be, okay, this is what we could settle it for. It may be a case that we could fight, but if this is the case that we could settle for, taking into account, you know, the future cost to retain expert witnesses, to go to trial, to do all the discovery. So it's really like a balancing act on a case by case basis. But what we always want to do is we always plan on a case going to trial, because I think when you do that, you're gathering evidence, you're gathering information as the case goes on. So if it does come to a point where there is a trial, you're ready to go. If it comes to a point where you're ready to make a summary judgment motion, you know, you're able to do that because you're kind of lining all your cards up that way to do so, and to make sure the case is as, you know, prepped as thoroughly as possible. And that could also in certain times lead to an early settlement, because you're finding out things earlier than maybe you wouldn't have if, you know, you're not litigating the case as aggressively as you should.
Got it. And so your client is the construction or the developer, right? The construction company. Do you also have to negotiate with the insurance company too when you're making these decisions about whether to keep pushing or not?
Yes. So primarily on the defense side, is the insurance carriers will be on a panel for various insurance carriers, and they'll retain us to represent one of their insureds on a specific case.
Oh, so your client's the insurance company then?
The client, the insurance carrier, is just essentially retaining us to represent the client. Client is the construction company, or, you know, store owner, whoever that may be, is our client. But the defense, you know, we're retained specifically in these personal injury defense cases by the insurance carrier directly.
Okay. Do you ever get retained directly by the by a construction company, by the business too?
There are cases where it's not necessarily an insurance based case where, you know, we'll be retained by a construction company directly.
Yeah.
So it'll kind of depend, but primarily a lot of it comes from, you know, the insurance companies that hire us to represent their insureds.
Okay. So so obviously you're trying to limit the damages, right? The payout. How do you figure that out? What's your process for doing that?
Yeah. So once the case starts, we serve some initial discovery demands just to get an idea of what the injuries are. And then we begin the process of obtaining the medical records from their various treating facilities that the plaintiff went to. We start analyzing those. We do verdict value searches on Westlaw or Lexis, and that's
similar cases. You do some research.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. Similar cases, similar injuries, where maybe the appellate courts have upheld, you know, that particular injury to be worth X. So that kind of gives you an idea as well as where a verdict could potentially end up, and that kind of gives you a framework. Then we also retain different expert witnesses to look into the case, both pre-deposition and post-deposition. Generally, you know, at the outset of the case, we'll retain, on occasion, we'll retain an expert to review the records and give us a preliminary type of finding. Yeah. But generally, after the depositions are done, we'll then have our experts examine the plaintiff and make a comment as to their injuries.
Okay.
And all of that kind of goes into the assessment of their injuries, any level of permanency, and that kind of shapes and forms you know, the potential settlement and verdict values of a case.
Okay. So use Westlaw. Do you ever do a focus group or a mock trial yourself to try to figure valuation out?
Not necessarily for valuations. I know there's been different training programs that certain people in our firm have attended in terms of that. But and even myself, I like to go to continuing legal education courses, just because the jury landscape is always changing.
Yeah.
You hear a lot now about, you know, the attention spans of the jurors are kind of have gotten shorter. And that's just, you know, the nature of kind of how we live these days. With a lot of people. It's always kind of evolving. So it's good to, you know, go to these continuing education classes, learning from different attorneys and their different practice areas. And then obviously just, you know, doing the trials, doing the jury selection yourself, you kind of notice, you know, the way things are changing and how, you know, what was more effective on a particular case, and then try to utilize that moving forward. So it's kind of a number of things, but primarily for, in terms of gaining settlement values, it's, you know, we work on a lot of cases here. So, you know, there's a lot of the injuries are kind of, you know, for the most, you'll see these injuries before. So it's very rarely. Cases. Exactly. So it's very rarely where you will see a case that you haven't seen before, an injury you haven't seen before, so you kind of have an idea. Yeah. But it's always good to, you know, to look at these appellate division case law so you can properly inform the insurance carrier and your client, you know, this is the potential exposure if they're successful on their liability claim.
Mm. Is your practice just in New York Metro, or do you go outside of that area?
We're primarily in the city, out in Long Island, but we also practice in New Jersey.
Yep.
We have some cases in Westchester County. We also have some cases a little bit further up north. Primarily it's the five boroughs in Long Island and New Jersey, but you know, we have gone up, and we do still have some cases that are a little bit more northern New York.
Got it. And what's your case? So you said you do a lot of cases. Like how many cases a year do you guys work on? Like you personally, what's your caseload?
Me personally, I generally carry a caseload between 40 and 50.
Okay.
And then I oversee an associate underneath me who also has a similar type caseload. So that's generally what I handle on it. And that consists of, like I mentioned, the construction site accidents, your general liability type cases, some commercial litigation cases as well, kind of spans that whole practice area that we do have as well.
Is that a typical caseload for a defense attorney like you?
Yeah, I think so. Just talking to other people in the area, I think that's generally kind of that. You know, that sweet spot of cases.
Okay, interesting. So how did you, how'd you make the decision? I saw you were in sports and sports management. How'd you make the decision to become a lawyer?
Yeah, so it's funny. I always wanted to be a lawyer. Growing up, my mom is a lawyer.
Okay.
She's now a judge. So I was always in a courtroom with her. I was always in her office. I was always around it. And I was like, oh, this is something, you know, I really want to do. And I kind of always, it was always a focus to eventually lead to being a lawyer.
Yeah.
It's funny, when I got to James Madison, though, I did do the sports management. There was some of a pre-law program, but because I had transferred, it would have taken me a little bit extra time to graduate. And I really wanted to end up just going to law school. So
okay.
I'm a huge sports fan. I was like, okay, this is a good way to be able to graduate on time, to meet, you know, and to do a subject that I thought was interesting. And, but it was all with the goal eventually of going to law school.
Oh, but you didn't think about like doing law in that area necessarily.
I've always wanted to be a litigator. I like being in the courtroom. And a lot, you know, with the sports management, there's a lot of out of courtroom, not really in the courtroom, not really trying cases in that type of area. Not something that I always wanted to do. That was always something that I was, I was always kind of focused on. So I thought, you know, let's do sports management. I love sports. Let's see how this is. And that's how it went.
Got it. Were you an athlete too growing up?
I was, yeah. I played baseball. I played football primarily. I played basketball. In high school, it was primarily football and baseball. That's actually why I went to Fairleigh Dickinson, New Jersey, my freshman year for baseball.
Oh, you did? Nice.
Yeah, but my last game of my senior year in high school, I tore my ACL.
Ooh.
So I was there. I was on the team, but I couldn't play at Fairleigh Dickinson. And then while I was rehabbing, tore my ACL again. Ooh. And I was like, okay, maybe it's time to hang up the cleats. And then I looked for, you know, for different schools at that point.
Oh, I see. I see. What position? What was your position?
First base.
First base. Okay.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Yeah.
So were you also a long ball hitter, power hitter?
I was in my day. Not, you know, I play some softball here and there now, and I got hurt again playing softball. So I was like, I'm done. But yeah,
that's it. You're done. You're playing golf now. Play golf.
And I was exactly. I started picking up golf. I'm absolutely horrendous, but we're trying. We're working on it.
Yeah, baseball players are usually pretty good golfers because it's really a lot of ways the same swing.
Yeah. I was getting a little bit better. This summer was a little bit difficult to play. A lot of weddings and things going on, but I'm working on it.
One day. Yeah, no, I live in South Florida, so, you know, there's plenty of golf here. I try to play at least once a week if I can.
Yeah, that's what I was. That sounds absolutely amazing. That's what I hopefully in the fall I'll be able to start doing that a little bit more now that we're here. It's wedding season.
Yeah, some nice golf courses around there. You go out to like where do you play? Do you play?
I primarily play in like a lot of the Westchester kind of public courses.
Yeah.
There, you know, I'll go out to Long Island occasionally, but yeah, primarily in Westchester.
Got it. Yeah. There's good golf courses out there.
Yeah, for sure.
So how many lawyers in your firm? How many people you got there?
Yeah, so we have about 20 roughly.
Okay.
Ranging from partners to associates, and you know, we're expanding, so we're constantly looking to bring in new people. So, you know, we're conducting some interviews to bring in some additional people.
Okay, good.
And like I mean, we out in our Long Island office, we have some people, and then we have the city. But that's, you know, that's kind of the total. We're at right in that 20 range.
Got it. And is this your first firm? Have you been there since you graduated?
No. So initially, when I graduated, I went to the Bronx District Attorney's office.
Oh, okay.
Which was a tremendous experience.
That's where you cut your teeth on trials, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It was unbelievable experience. I was there for probably about 3.5 years. Or so, and you know, I loved it. It was fantastic. And like you said, you know, I got that trial opportunity very early on. You know, I remember talking to some of my buddies from law school who hadn't even been to a courtroom yet, and then I was doing my first trial at that point. So, you know, anyone that's ever interested in litigating, I always recommend. You know, I think going to a prosecutor's office or going to a public defender's office, it's one of the best things I think you could do because it really just you get the experience right away of being in a courtroom, which I think is half the value.
So you went to Pace. Does Pace have a trial program as part of the curriculum?
There's a trial advocacy class where we do like a mock trial. There's some mock trial. So yeah, I did that. And then they have just a bunch of different teams. There's a mediation team. There's a baseball arbitration team, which is one of the things that I had done as well. But, and there was a very good externship program at Pace where, you know, they would place people in different district attorney's offices or public defender's offices throughout, you know, Westchester and the five boroughs and even Long Island. So I did that, and that kind of got me into the district attorney's office in the Bronx. And that's eventually led to a position there. So yeah, I mean, I was there probably about 3.5 years or so.
Yeah.
And then I went to work for a plaintiff side personal injury medical malpractice firm.
Yeah.
And then shortly after that, I came here, and I've been here since, I guess it's about 2018, like the summer of 2018.
Okay. Why'd you make the switch from the plaintiff side to the defense side?
I think it was just kind of, I felt like I was always more interested in that side specifically just when I was, but one of the main reasons I came here is one of my very good friends from the district attorney's office was working here. Okay. He's actually since moved to Florida. But he, you know, he always talked up working here. He said it was, you know, an amazing experience. And so I went, I met with them, I spoke with them, and, you know, I was like, this is the place for me. I just felt a strong connection with this place more than anything and with the people here. So I was like, let's give this a go. And I've been obviously very happy. I've been here since. So,
oh, that's great.
Yeah.
It's good to find your place. It's interesting. A lot of times I'll ask the question about, like, you know, your preference for the plaintiff side or the defense mm-hmm. side. Always interested to hear that. I think it relates to somewhat relates to sort of personality type, maybe.
I do think something could be said to that. And it's funny because I've heard a lot of people say this before too, and I do see the similarities, you know, to an extent, is a lot of prosecutors end up getting kind of drawn to the defense side a lot of the times. Mm. And I've noticed that even just with the people I've worked with. You know, there are certain similarities with that. But the thing that I do like about working here is we also do get the opportunity to do some plaintiff side if you want to, too, because we're not just strictly limited. While, again, a good portion of our business is insurance defense, personal injury defense cases, because you kind of get that wide range here where we could do any, you know, a little bit of anything. It keeps things fresh. It keeps you going. Like if you have a personal injury case that you want to bring in, you know, you could bring it in and you could work it up if you want, or, you know, one of our partners, Phil Ayala, who does a lot of the personal injury stuff, you know, then him and his team will take care of, but you have the opportunity to work on that case and those different types of cases. And I think it's refreshing to be able to do that.
Are you responsible for getting your own business too?
It's not a requirement, but obviously if you're able to, that's always good. But it's not necessarily a requirement for the position. It's really, you know, based on your performance and how you work your cases, you know, if you're on top of things and that type of thing. But if you're able to bring in cases, that's always great too.
Yeah. Well, I imagine if you have insurance companies as clients, you're going to get a steady stream of cases, right?
Yes. That's certainly one of the benefits of that.
You don't have to go out there and hunt them down. You're going to get this. I'm sure there's no end to the amount of cases that you're asked to work on.
Yeah, there's always someone's always getting sued. Someone's always starting a lawsuit. It's always and there's a lot of there's a lot of personal injury cases out there. So
yes.
Yeah, definitely. You know, having those relationships with the insurance companies is always, you know, it's great for business. It's also great just to, you know, just to meet people in other kind of areas and other fields, and just kind of learning what these different insurance companies look for, and then just kind of strengthening your skills as a lawyer too. It's definitely good.
So what are the skills? I mean, what do you think makes you a good lawyer? What are the skills?
I think the number one thing, honestly, is preparation. I think the more prepared you are for, in terms of your cases, the more you're able to deal with the unexpected that kind of comes in. So, and it's kind of goes back to my point that I mentioned before, where, you know, the way we look at cases at our firm is we're assuming every case is going to trial. And because of that, preparing these cases in that way. So by being able to do that, you're able to kind of expect things. You're able to handle the potential issues that come up in the case. Same thing going into court. If you're prepared for an oral argument, you're prepared for, even if it's just a conference, you know exactly, you know, where you need to be with everything. But being prepared for those situations allows you, you know, some degree of flexibility if something else happens, because you're kind of anticipating, you know, where certain things to go. So I certainly think the preparation is very important. And then, you know, and the hard work. I mean, if you put in the hard work that goes into the preparation, I think, you know, I think you could be a successful attorney that way. You know, I've always kind of prided myself on really, you know, being a hard worker, putting a lot of time in, you know, doing the best for my clients. doing the best for the firm that, you know, my firm, and I, you know, when I worked at the DA's office, same thing, doing the best for, you know, the victims of the cases and the defendants and in cases. So I think kind of all that kind of plays into each other. And I think that's really probably the most important thing I could say is, you know, is being prepared.
I mean, I would think that would go without saying. I mean, you got to be prepared. Otherwise, how could you possibly even try that, right? But you find people that are not as prepared as you when you go into these.
I think so. Yeah. And I think in certain scenarios, I do think it's noticeable.
Yeah.
Where, you know, where you do see that, you would think it should be something that's, you know, right. It's your job. You should be prepared for it. You should work hard for it. But I do think sometimes you could, you come across that not being the case, not to say that's, you know, like a huge problem in sure. the industry, but I do think that, you know, there are certain scenarios where if you could tell who's prepared and who's not. And I do think that makes a difference. Even when you're going into court, the judge sees that, a jury sees who's prepared. I think all of that kind of, it all weaves into each other for all the different aspects of a litigation.
Yeah. What's the most important thing for the jury? Like what do you think is the thing that moves them the most?
I think it depends on the type of case. I think you don't want to be very long-winded in certain scenarios. And I think if you have a good case, you want to be succinct, you want to be to the point, you don't want to kind of address certain things that maybe shouldn't necessarily be addressed. If you have your strong case, you deal with it. If you have your strong case, you play those strong points up to a jury. Obviously you get to talk to them during voir dire, and that's a very important point in the process. Obviously it's the only time where you're able to have a conversation with the jurors. So being able to speak with a jury and see how they're receptive to, you know, the type of case, what you're saying, are they interested, are they disinterested right away? A lot of that is fleshed out in jury selection. So then, you know, by the time you go to trial, and you're beginning your opening statements, you have an idea of what you think maybe the jury values, I guess, mm-hmm. I would say.
But you're up against a super aggressive plaintiff attorney that's trying to get a big verdict. How do you defend that?
I guess it depends on the it'll depend on the type of case that you have. But I try not to get out of the way that I try a case just because someone else is kind of handling it differently. Meaning, if they're more, you know, if they're louder, if they're screaming, if they're doing that, I try to avoid kind of playing into that and getting out of my rhythm or my zone or how I want to try a case. Mm. You know, certain scenarios you're going to have to be more animated. I think just the kind of two areas that I've worked on, being, you know, being a prosecutor and being, you know, a defense attorney, I think those tend to be a little bit less bombastic and when you're trying your case. And I think that's more of my personality. That's not to say that I don't get animated when I need to, but I think it's important to try, you know, try the facts of your case and stay in, you know, how you prepared for it, stay in your lane of how you want the trial to go, how you want to present yourself to a jury and not get kind of caught up in other things.
Got it. So be yourself and stay with your style. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Good stuff. So final words here. What do you want people to know about your firm and best way to connect with you?
Yeah. So thank you very much again for the opportunity to speak with you. It's been a pleasure. But yeah, as far as our firm, it's like I mentioned before, while we certainly do, you know, a lot of personal injury defense cases, we do offer a wide array of services. We do the plaintiff side, we do the commercial litigation, we do wage and hour claims, we've defended municipalities. And, you know, we're a firm that, like I mentioned before, we always have an eye towards trial. So you can always expect us to be prepared. You can always expect us to do the best for our client. And then in terms of reaching us, we have our website, maaalaw.com. We're on LinkedIn under the firm name as well. And, Yeah, and we're always, you know, we're always available.
Okay, so even you didn't pronounce the name of your firm. Okay.
Well, that I can do. No, the but the website is MAA.
MAA, yeah, got it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I see a lot of law firms are shortening it for that reason. Right? You got a bunch of partners and your ears particularly challenging with a name, but good stuff. All right, good stuff. Well, excellent. Thank you very much again for everybody. Peter Naber with MAA&A, McManus, Ateşoğlu, Aiello, and Apostolakos PLLC.
You got it.
Excellent.
Perfect.
And it's been a pleasure. And this is sponsored by EmotionTrack. EmotionTrack is a legal tech platform that helps litigators prepare for cases, mediation, and trials with our Insights platform. Thanks again, Peter. Really fun.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. Okay.